Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Do No Harm ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
In the summer of 2018, Dr. Julie Mack was just sitting down at her home computer after a long day at work, when she noticed an email from a father in Texas.
Dr. Mack, I apologize for reaching out through what I assume is a personal email address. To summarize, our son Mason, 6 months old, suffered a fall onto concrete, causing a fracture. He is healing beautifully with no permanent damage.
She read on.
But CPS has removed him and our daughter, Charlotte, from our home and placed them with my mother during our investigation.
Now, their reasoning was that the CT specialist found a second fracture that is currently unexplained.
What we desperately need is a secondary review of the imaging by a medical professional.
Please let me know how we can move forward with you. Thank you again for your time. I greatly appreciate it. All the best. Michael Dylan Bright.
She sent a reply that evening.
Dear Mr. Bright, I'm sorry to hear what you are going through. Do you have the imaging discs and reports? Julie.
She closed her computer and headed to bed. Emails like Dylan's weren't unusual for Dr. Mack. A Harvard-trained radiologist, she has reviewed hundreds of cases of suspected child abuse. It's something she does in her spare time, never for money.
I don't volunteer at food banks, but I do volunteer my time for this. I have to limit it just because I have a job and a family, but I do think it's important work.
Over the years, she's noticed a recurring problem. It seems to her that CPS investigators often jumped to conclusions after getting a report from a child abuse pediatrician, confusing reasonable suspicion with proof of wrongdoing.
I think particularly when assumptions are made that aren't warranted, I think that there's a real significant chance that an injustice will occur.
When Dr. Mack opened up Mason's medical records, she found problems right away. For one, Mason had been diagnosed with a bleeding disorder while he was still at Texas Children's Hospital, which may have explained why he'd had so much bleeding around his brain after a short fall onto concrete. But the hospital child abuse team never followed up to tell CPS about the condition. As for that second skull fracture, the one that child abuse pediatrician said couldn't have come from a fall in the driveway?
That second fracture was hairline. It was very small, through a very thinned area.
Texas Children's doctors told the agency Melissa's story couldn't possibly explain all of Mason's injuries. But according to Dr. Mack, the science said otherwise.
I said, look, it's on the same side. It's in the same plane. You can get more than one fracture from a single impact. And that has been reported by multiple authors.
Dr. Mack began writing a report, one with a very different conclusion about what could have happened to Mason.
I wasn't there. I can't tell you how he fell, where he fell, or whether it wasn't a fall or somebody hit him on the head. Nobody can. But what I can say is the story made perfect sense for what I was seeing.
On September 5th, 2018, about a week after the Brights ended their agreement with CPS and brought their children home, Dr. Mack emailed Dylan with a copy of her 4-page report. Dylan opened it right away.
In summary, there is nothing about the CT findings in this case that contradict the mother's statement that Mason suffered a fall on concrete that resulted in bleeding around the brain and skull fractures.
Dylan was elated. He forwarded a copy of Dr. Mack's report to LeVar Jones, the CPS investigator.
This had to be actionable. This had to be, you know, something that would absolutely change the course of their investigation.
Except that course had already been set, and there was nothing that Dr. Mack or the Brights or anyone else could do to stop it.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com /Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My two hands alone can't hold you back from harm.
From NBC News and Wondery, I'm Mike Hixenbaugh, and this is Do No Harm.
Hush, little baby, don't you cry. Come with me and dry your eye. Dry your eye.
This is Episode 3, Immediate Danger. With their kids back at home, the Brights began slipping back into their normal routines. After weeks out of the office for Mason's hospital visits, Dylan was finally catching up at work. And Melissa signed up to volunteer at the kids' preschool program.
We got to enjoy the simplicities of life again. And I think that in those simple moments are when Dylan and I finally got to start healing from it all.
You know, I was going to work and coming home and having dinners of family. And so it was just getting back to being a family again and kind of putting everything that had happened behind us.
They figured CPS had moved on, too. Then, on the morning of September 18th, 21 days after Dylan had called LeVar to tell him they were bringing their kids home, and more than a week after he'd emailed him a copy of Dr. Mack's report, LeVar sent Melissa a text. She was in her car, sitting in a parking lot outside of Hobby Lobby with her mom and the kids, when she noticed the message. She read it out loud.
Good morning. How is Mason?
After more than 3 weeks and no contact, the message surprised her.
And I'm like, you know, what should I text back? I want to make sure that they know everything, you know. And so I sent a novel of a text message updating them on Mason's well-being. And I sent him some adorable photos I had taken of Mason that day or the day before so that way he could see how well he was and how he was thriving.
LeVar responded right away.
He looks really good.
In that same message, he said he needed to follow up with them. LeVar asked if he could come by the next day. Melissa texted back to say that would be fine. She called Dylan and filled him in. She was nervous. Dylan didn't see any reason to worry.
I thought that he had gotten my messages about the second opinion and that he had just finally cycled back around to checking in on our case. And so I assumed that he was going to come and see the kids and see that everything was okay.
The Brights figured LeVar just needed to see the children one more time, safe and at home, before closing out the case. Finally, they thought, their ordeal would be over. But at CPS's offices that afternoon, a much different chain of events had been set in motion, one that CPS was keeping a secret from the Brights. Around 4:45 that afternoon, 6 hours after he texted Melissa, LeVar sent a message to his supervisor, Naisha Edwards.
Is the affidavit for Jess Mason or Charlotte also? We can add Charlotte because she's in the home.
A few minutes later, he had another question. Why were they doing this again? Naisha texted back.
Due to the child's continuous visits to the hospital and the extensive injuries, and there being no explanation for the injuries.
Later that same night, at around 8:30, Naisha sent a final text.
Good job on the affidavit. Please report to legal first thing.
I reached out to LeVar, Naisha, and other CPS officials to ask about their handling of the Bright case, but they declined to be interviewed. Across town, in Tomball, Melissa was just getting the kids down to bed. Like they did each night, Melissa read to Charlotte, brown bear, what do you see? While nursing Mason in a rocking chair. Afterward, she lay each of them down in their beds, kissed their heads, and whispered the same prayer she's repeated every night since they were born. Thank you, Jesus. Then she clicked off the lights. The next day, at the Harris County Juvenile Justice Center, Ryan Mitchell had just stepped off an elevator when one of the court coordinators flagged him down.
Hey, do you have time for another case? I say, yes, ma'am. They hand me the removal affidavit, and she tells me we're ready to get started on it.
Ryan, a former prosecutor with slicked hair and a neatly trimmed beard, now mostly handles CPS cases. He grabbed the new case file and carried it into a small room with a conference table, a space where lawyers can regroup with clients after hearings. Or in this case, to try and speed read a CPS document before walking into court. Ryan reads two or three of these kinds of cases every month. He's one of about 100 names on a list of court-appointed lawyers who could be tapped at a moment's notice to represent parents accused of abuse. Stamped across the top of this document, in all caps, it read, "In the interest of Charlotte Bright, Mason Bright, children." As Ryan scanned the page, four words jumped out at him: immediate and continuing danger. Dylan and Melissa, the parents in the case, were nowhere to be seen. That wasn't unusual. It was still Ryan's job to represent them, or specifically, Dylan Bright. Another lawyer was on hand to defend Melissa. He'd never met Dylan. But now, Ryan was going to have to come up with a reason why Dylan should keep his kids.
So the first things first, I asked for just a little bit of time to be able to just, you know, introduce myself to the caseworker, kind of figure out what's going on before I even have an idea of when we're going to have this case heard.
Ryan approached LeVar Jones in the hallway and shook his hand. He'd handled cases with LeVar before and always thought of him as a nice guy.
We step aside into one of the conference rooms and I just start asking general questions that I ask every caseworker when I'm first put on a case. I learned that I represent the father in this case, so I start asking questions first. Is he here? And he said, no, I talked to Dad. He's not coming down.
But LeVar hadn't talked to Dylan, and the Brights had no idea the hearing was happening. A few minutes later, the court coordinator flagged them down. The judge was ready to start. Ryan hadn't even had time to finish reading the paperwork.
So, yes, it does seem unusual that an attorney is just given a document right away and said, hey, you know, basically being slapped on the butt and said, hey, go in front of the judge and do your thing. The way the law is written, they don't even have to give the opportunity for essentially that testimony.
The goal? To give CPS the freedom to move quickly when the agency believes a child is in serious danger. Unlike a criminal case, CPS doesn't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that children have been abused. It just has to convince a judge the kids are more likely than not in danger. The lawyers filed into Harris County's 315th Juvenile District Court. The room was mostly empty. The county attorney representing CPS called LeVar to the stand. He raised his right hand and swore to tell the truth. He explained that CPS was seeking emergency custody of Charlotte and Mason Bright because the baby suffered serious and unexplained injuries. LeVar described the two skull fractures, the bleeding around his brain, and the conclusion by Texas Children's Hospital doctors that those injuries didn't appear to match the story of a short fall in a driveway. He didn't mention the second medical opinion Dylan had sent him. Then, the county attorney asked the only question that really mattered. Do you believe there's an immediate threat to the health and safety of the child at this time? At this time, I would say yes. As Ryan listened to LeVar describe the case, some details weren't adding up. If CPS believed Charlotte and Mason's parents were dangerous, why had LeVar waited 3 weeks to seek an emergency removal? Where was the immediate danger?
That was the red flag for us.
But when Ryan asked the question, why seek the removal now? LeVar had an answer. He'd only learned for certain the children were back home when he'd texted Melissa for an update the day before. Okay, Ryan thought. But then, why hadn't he checked on the kids in 3 weeks?
I mean, I know this caseworker, nice guy. It just, when he kept circling around answers, it just, he was making eye contact, but he was a very monotone expression. Either this caseworker doesn't know what they're doing, or there's something the caseworker is not telling us.
But the judge had already heard everything he needed to hear. The hearing lasted about half an hour. Later that afternoon, LeVar was in his car and heading north along I-45. When he got close, he texted Naisha, his supervisor.
Just an update. I'm waiting on law enforcement to meet me at the residence. I'm in the area.
Around that same time, Dylan was wrapping up his workday. Melissa was in the kitchen, making an extra large batch of spaghetti. enough to share with a friend who just had a new baby. The kids were watching cartoons. It was the start of the hardest night of their lives.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Don't waste time on apps that don't work. Babbel's conversation-based teaching prepares you for real-life situations. And studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/truecrime. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/truecrime, spelled BABBEL.com/truecrime. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So, you keep trying to get in shape, and it keeps not working. I'm Lacey Green, a super trainer with Body. That's BODI.com. And I've got a story you have to hear. I have a client who came to me because she was really frustrated that every gym or trainer she tried made her feel bad because she was a beginner. She had tried it all, and she just felt humiliated. And that's when we started working together, and I took her through my 3-week program called For Beginners Only. Once she realized that she wasn't the problem and that she just needed the right program, she started to get results. And now she's completely unstoppable and feeling so strong and confident. And I can do the same for you. On the Body app, subscribers lose 5 to 10 pounds consistently in their first month. And I bet you will too. In fact, CNN underscore just named Body best fitness app. And right now, Body has a special introductory offer. The next 500 new users who sign up for a year of Body save 72%. That's just 33 cents a day. All you have to do is go to body.com. That's BODI.com.
Dylan and Melissa didn't understand what was taking LeVar so long. He'd said he would come by around 5 p.m. on September 19th, but 2 hours later, they still hadn't heard from him. They'd held off on eating dinner, hoping to enjoy their spaghetti once CPS was officially out of their lives.
And finally, it's getting bedtime, which was 7 for Mason. And I texted him, and I'm like, okay, LeVar, well, if you want to see Mason, you got to make it soon. Finally, at 7:30, LeVar called Dylan and asked him to stand outside, to come outside. And so eagerly, Dylan got up and he went outside as if he was just going to flag him down.
Melissa held Mason and watched out the window as LeVar pulled up and stepped out of his car. The sun had begun to set, casting long shadows across the front yard as the two men started talking. She could tell right away, from Dylan's body language, something was wrong. He was jabbing his finger in the air as he talked.
Dylan is a very emotive with his hands, especially when he gets worked up. Something was going on. There was something more than just inviting him over.
A moment later, Dylan and LeVar came in through the front door.
Dylan walks inside. The first thing he says is, they got a court order to take the kids.
Melissa was stunned.
And I mean, like, it struck me like a wrecking ball. I was like, what does that even mean? Why? How? When? For what reason?
The words didn't even sound like English. It had been no communication, no anything for 3 weeks. And then all of a sudden he shows up and he says he has a court order to take the kids. It doesn't make any sense how he possibly could have pulled that off. How was that even legal?
Dylan grabbed his recorder and set it on the kitchen counter.
Okay, it is 7:30 and September 19th. And our meeting with LeVar, we've just been told that now they had an emergency hearing and they have temporary receivership or whatever. So
LeVar cut to the chase.
I mean, like I say, we have temporary managing conservatorship. That means we have temporary custody, the state of Texas.
Why? I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Because number one, the PCSP was violated.
No, that's
the... LeVar said he didn't have a choice. Mason had unexplained injuries, and the Brights had brought the kids home in violation of the safety plan. What about the report from the radiologist, Dr. Mack? Dylan asked.
I'm not saying... We have decisions being made that are serious decisions but you're doing so on like 50% of it. You say, I have all I need. I'm telling you that a proper investigation would have had all the reports. It bothers me
Dylan, at still, right, so this doctor, the Julie Mack, mm-hmm. right? Again, you Why guys not? Have this from a second opinion, right? We, at the end of the day, we still have what we have from Texas Children's Hospital.
Melissa's hands shook as she talked. She reminded LeVar how Mason had been up, crying all night for weeks while separated from his mother, hindering his recovery. She reminded him how they'd spent days living out of a truck after Mason had undergone surgery. But CPS kept delaying. That's why they had brought the kids home.
You are no longer considering our child's best interest. Yes. You broke the safety plan. I had no choice. I had no choice. What kind of mother would I be if I allowed you to put my son in further harm's way? What kind of mother would that make me? That is on you.
Okay, calm down.
No, it's my children. I can't calm down.
I'm not. We're not going to do that. We're not going to do that.
LeVar, you didn't do anything.
Okay. All right, that's your opinion.
No, that's legitimate.
I want you to be honest and look at the timeline of events and you tell me, did you work diligently?
Okay. Like I said, guys, court is October 3rd at 9:30, 1200.
And so we can't see our children until then? So my breastfed son? You are taking him from my breast!
Melissa.
You are responsible for taking my child away from my breast.
Melissa.
Sorry.
At that moment, a Harris County Sheriff's deputy arrived at the front door, the law enforcement backup that LeVar had been waiting for. While the deputy reviewed the court order, Dylan and Melissa pleaded their case to him. CPS had known for more than 3 weeks that Charlotte and Mason were home. So what was the emergency now? And why hadn't they been notified about the court hearing that morning? They could have told their side of the story.
It's a court order removal of the children. There's no way they can go around.
No, right. But the court, based on what grounds?
That I cannot answer.
Why weren't we notified that there was an emergency court hearing? Why
about the emergency? Well, for one, the disgruntledness, I figured it would be combative. I knew it was going to be
children.
Disgruntledness. That's why CPS hadn't told the Brights the agency was going to court seeking an emergency order to take their children. LeVar said he figured it would be combative.
What grounds was this emergency hearing?
The hearing is October 3rd. I've already explained the reason for the emergency.
Well, I'm just asking.
That's when the reality of the situation began to set in for Melissa. Her children were going away. She didn't know where or for how long. And she was powerless to stop it. There was nothing they could do. Charlotte, the 2-year-old, could tell something was wrong. She tried to comfort her mom. I'm happy, Mommy, Charlotte said. I'm happy. Melissa crouched down on the floor.
Mom, is it okay? Can you give Mommy a hug and make her happy?
Are you okay?
Are you okay, Charlotte?
Yeah.
You're okay? Thank you so much, baby girl. You're so beautiful, Charlotte.
We're happy.
The toddler kept saying it over and over, as if willing it to be true.
And as much as I love that child, there wasn't a hug in the world that was going to make what was about to happen not happen. And so she's trying to comfort me and it's not working and she doesn't understand why. But at the same time, I want her to hug me and not let go for the rest of eternity because I don't know when I'll hug her again. And I just wanted to hold on.
But time was running out. They had been arguing with LeVar for more than an hour. He had a court order, and there was no way around that. It was time to pack the children's bags.
And so I went upstairs and I got one suitcase, and I put in, several clothes, items for both of them, outfits, and pajamas, lots of pajamas and socks and diapers for both of them.
Melissa grabbed their favorite stuffed animals. An elephant for Mason. Giraffe, the stuffed giraffe for Charlotte.
And I made sure that they had bottles, and thankfully we had formula for Mason, a container of formula, so I could put that in the bag.
Downstairs, Dylan wrote out instructions for the strangers who would be caring for their children. Mason needed to sleep on a slight incline to ensure fluid did not build up in his head. Charlotte had a severe dairy allergy and could not eat or drink any milk products whatsoever.
At the bottom of the page, I didn't know what else I could do, so I just wrote to tell them that we love them. And we handed this paper to LeVar and this bag packed full of anything we could possibly think of that our kids would need.
Now, it was time to take the children out to the car. Melissa collapsed on the floor. Dylan picked up his daughter and carried her out to LeVar's car. Melissa trailed behind them with Mason. That's when Charlotte started to scream and kick. Dylan had to force her down into the seat to buckle her in.
That moment was the hardest moment for me, because my little girl is crying and screaming because I'm putting her into a car seat that's not mommy's car. She knows it's not mommy's car. And I kept telling her that, you know, baby, it's going to be okay. You're going to go, you're going to see some friends. You know, you're going to go spend the night with some friends. It'll be okay. She kept trying to say, you know, daddy, I don't want to go. I want to stay here. I want to go back to my room.
Dylan kissed his daughter on the head. He told her he loved her and that he would see her soon. Then he shut the car door.
The moment I closed the door, man, that the screaming was just so intense.
Dylan went and stood with Melissa in the front yard and waited. LeVar and the deputy stood at the front of their car, talking for several minutes as Charlotte's cries grew louder.
You could just hear her screaming through the car. Finally, I just got to a point where I was just so bad. I'm like, could you go? Could you get in the car? You're just standing here and you're making it way worse on her.
Finally, LeVar got into his car. He started the engine, flicked on the headlights. Dylan and Melissa held each other in the front yard, watching them pull away. As the car turned the corner, Charlotte's muffled screams faded to silence.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling t-shirts from a booth at your local farmer's market or dishing out handmade crafts online, Shopify's POS system manages it all. Unite your in-person and online business with a trusted platform that supports your retail hustle. Get started with hardware tailored to your needs, from payments on the go to full-scale retail setups, with round-the-clock support to keep your sales smooth as silk. Do the smart thing for retail. Go with Shopify. For a limited time, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/wondery, all lowercase. Take your business to new heights. Visit shopify.com/wondery today. That's shopify.com/wondery.
Back inside, the Brights looked around their empty house. Signs of their children were all around them. Framed photos on the wall. Toys scattered on the living room floor. A plastic sippy cup turned on its side on the kitchen counter. But the children? They were gone.
It's hard to explain how quiet a house is without your kids in it. And I know that's something that parents take as a break and something they look forward to, but it's one thing when you know they're going to be coming back and that noise will be filled again, and then not knowing if they'll ever be noisy again. And it was suffocating.
And so just the gravity of the whole situation kind of hits you in that moment, and it's, man, it's everything you can do to keep your knees from buckling. And the only reason I was even able to keep it together myself was because of just how broken Melissa was at that point. And so I couldn't do anything for my kids, so at least the one thing I could do was keep it together enough for my wife.
The sheriff's deputy followed them inside, just to make sure they were okay. It was after 11 p.m. by the time he left. Dylan and Melissa headed upstairs and grabbed their laptops. And for the next several hours, they sat up in bed, searching for answers. What were their rights? Who should they call?
There's no way that this just happened to us and that it was right. There's no way that this was legal. So we spent maybe the next 2 or 3 hours, you know, Melissa, trying to put a plan together, what lawyers we could call, who we could reach out to. There was no sleep.
There are moments where I'm distracted just long enough with a task, like researching some attorneys to stop the crying. And then I realize why I'm looking for an attorney, and it just floods back in. I felt this need that I needed to nurse Mason, and there was no Mason to nurse, and I just couldn't cry anymore.
Eventually, Melissa closed her computer. She walked down the hall to Mason's room. She curled up on the floor in his empty nursery, alone in the dark, praying that her babies were safe.
I felt more weak and exhausted than I have ever felt in my life. There was no even energy to feel sad at that point. It was just all gone.
The next morning, before sunrise, Melissa contacted the one person who she knew would understand what she was going through, a woman named Anne Marie Timmerman. One of Melissa's friends from church had connected her with Anne Marie weeks earlier, when CPS first opened its investigation. Anne Marie had been through something similar in 2016. CPS had taken custody of her baby, Tristan, for several months. A child abuse pediatrician told CPS he'd been abused, an opinion later refuted by several medical experts. Anne Marie noticed the text from Melissa as soon as she woke up.
And I remember reading the text, and the first one said, "Anne Marie, CPS took the kids." And at that moment, I fell to my knees. I cried with her. I cried. But then I became strength, and I told her, I said, "Melissa, we're going to get through this. We're going to get Dennis Slate involved, and he's going to bring your babies home."
Dennis Slate, the lawyer who'd helped Anne-Marie with her CPS case. The moment Anne-Marie got off the phone, she called him on his cell.
I was sitting in my kitchen, kind of looking out the big window, drinking a cup of coffee, kind of collecting my thoughts. I had a very busy day planned. I was going to be in a big hearing that morning, and I was thinking about the hearing and what I needed to do.
A former officer in the Army Reserves, Dennis had carved out a niche defending parents against CPS accusations. Often, there was more work than he could keep up with. This was one of those days.
All of a sudden, my phone rings, and it's about 6:30 in the morning. And I look over, and it's Anne Marie. There are times when you're wanting to talk to Anne Marie, and there are times when you don't, because you know an Anne Marie conversation is going to be very long and intense.
But it wasn't normal for her to call so early. So he picked up.
I said, "Hello, Anne Marie, what's going on?" And she kind of is in a panic state. And she said, "I need you to talk to my friend, Melissa Bright."
I told Dennis about CPS showing up, about the Brights not knowing, about the court order. And I explained to Dennis the emotional turmoil that Melissa was going through and how important it was to me.
She begged Dennis to look at their case. Dennis said, fine. But there was no way he could do it that day. He would try to fit the Brights in sometime over the next few days, once his schedule wasn't so packed.
Anne Marie is probably the most persistent person I've ever met in my entire life.
I was not going to get off the phone with him until I felt like he was going to look at it that day.
I mean, if you know Anne Marie, you know that if you tell her no, she's just going to keep at you until you say yes. And so it doesn't really help to fight it.
He told Anne Marie to have Melissa call his office, and that he would do his best to fit them in. That afternoon, Dylan and Melissa gathered all of their files. Documents CPS had shared, Mason's medical records, the second opinion from Dr. Mack. They loaded the files into Dylan's truck and began the hour-long drive to Dennis's office. They didn't talk much during the ride. They were both exhausted and lost in their own thoughts.
And that was a very tense drive, because it's the first time in, say, the past 24 hours that we had any kind of semblance of hope.
Melissa thought about the kids. She wondered where they were and if they were safe.
You just always wonder, you know, is your kid eating okay? Are they getting attention? Are they getting love? Are they scared? Are they hurt? Are they harmed?
As they drove, Dylan silently ran through all the things he wanted to tell the lawyer. About LeVar's failure to check on the kids for 22 days. About the disregarded second medical opinion. Just knowing that there was a lawyer willing to stay late after office hours gave Dylan some relief. Maybe Dennis would actually listen to their story. Consider all of the evidence. Maybe this would be a turning point.
We finally had somebody on our team that was willing to put on some gloves and go fight CPS.
What the Brights didn't know was 30 miles away in a different Houston suburb, another set of parents were also searching for help. On paper, the two CPS cases could not have been more similar. Two sets of parents, both fighting to save their families after having their two young children torn from their arms. Although they had never met, their paths were about to cross in ways they couldn't possibly have predicted. That's next time on Do No Harm. From NBC News and Wondery, this is episode 3 of 6 of Do No Harm, a story about innocent children and the adults who are supposed to keep them safe. The next episode will be out in a week, but listen to it right now, ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Do No Harm was written, reported, and hosted by me, Mike Hixenbaugh, a national investigative reporter for NBC News. Special thanks to my reporting partner, Carrie Blakinger, whose reporting made this podcast possible. If you want to help us spread the word, please give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to tell your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Wondery app, or wherever you're listening right now. In the episode notes, you'll find some links and offers from our sponsors. Please support them. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a small survey at wondery.com/survey. Associate producers are Chris Siegel and Allison Bailey. Story editor is Julie Shapiro. Additional production assistance from Daniel Gonzalez. Music supervisor, Scott Velazquez. Managing producer, Lata Pandya. Sound design by Jeff Schmidt. Executive produced for NBC News by Steve Lichtai. Executive produced by George Lavender, Marshall Louie, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Do No Harm ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Rhea Seehorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.